Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here to look forward to the second half of calendar 2014. We do this twice a year, in January and in July. And host of the show, Tammy Flanagan, and myself, Bob Lines, are here. Mike Causey's on an extended vacation, so he would otherwise join us, but I think he probably would rather stay where he is. Okay, got your soothsayer eyes out to look forward to changes. Let's talk about that quickly, and then we'll open the phone lines up because we got some pretty good emails already.
Yeah, we already got a few emails came in, and we're going to try to answer those as well.
Okay, so from your horizon, from your viewpoint of your horizon on Bennies and Social Security and the like, what do you see?
Well, some of the things that we know are going to change because the legislation has already passed would be things like the Self Plus One federal health benefits option, which will take effect in the 2015 health benefits open season, but coverage won't start until 2016. So for federal employees and retirees who are just in a family of two, whether it's you and a spouse or you and a dependent child, that might save you some money. We're hoping at least it'll save some money as opposed to having to enroll in the self and family coverage. So that's one we know is going to change. We're just waiting for it to be implemented. Another similar type change that has already taken effect, in fact, it's 2 years ago this month, that the phased retirement law was signed, and that's going to take effect hopefully this year, maybe later on this year towards the end of the year, or maybe early in 2015, which would allow federal employees, and I think this is a great benefit. I just hope agencies adopt it and use it. It allows employees who are, I would say, financially ready to retire, but not mentally ready to retire. You know, they've got enough money. If they retired tomorrow, they'd be fine financially, but that's a scary prospect, as you well know, right? So you're thinking, I'm never retiring. So instead of just continuing to work full time, you know, until whenever, it would allow you to retire and work half time. So you come back to work after you retire, work 20 hours a week, and you would collect half of your retirement at the same time. So it'd be more than what you would receive if you were fully retired, but less than your full paycheck. And then you can do that. The agency may set a limit, but you might want to do it for 2 years or 5 years or however long. And at the end of the period of phased retirement, then your retirement would be recomputed to include all of the service, including that phased period, to have your whole retirement recalculated to include that additional service and even any additional pay increases. So your high three could change.
Okay. Is there an outer limit to how many years you can be in phased retirement?
Not in the law. The law didn't set a limit, but it does have some room there for agencies to set a limit. So it basically says it has to be mutually agreeable between the employee and the agency. So the agency can't force you into phased retirement, but likewise, the employee can't do it without the agency's blessing. So it'll be interesting to see once this is finally in full readiness to go out, you know, how the agencies are going to look at it. Because agencies could say, no, we're not going to do it. So they don't necessarily have to agree to accept this. And there are some employees who are already excluded. So employees who are in a mandatory retirement situation, like law enforcement, firefighters, they won't be able to do phased retirement. Also, employees who are 62 with just 5 years of service, they probably wouldn't want to do phased retirement because it's not going to be a benefit to do it, but they also would be excluded. So,
do you get much traction in the seminars on this subject?
Yeah, I always, when it comes up, I always ask the class, I say, if this was available today, how many of you would be interested? And believe it or not, like 50% of those who are eligible are like, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. Because I think that's where a lot of people are right now, especially under CSRS, where they might have 40 years. I've met people lately with 45, 50 years of service. And it's not that they can't afford it. You know that their retirement would be pretty much what their take-home pay is, if not more. But it's just that they love what they do. Or they're working on something, they want to see it to finish, or you know, they want to help bring up the next generation of employees. And part of that requirement would be mentoring. So when somebody does go into phased retirement, they would have to spend 20% of their time or 4 hours a week on mentoring. And of course, that definition has a lot of room for definition. But So that's part of the requirements.
All right.
Great. So that's two things that are passed into law that are coming. We're just waiting for that to be rolled out. Now, as far as what's proposed to change, those are some scary things. You know, there are some things there that would make somebody retire tomorrow, but the warning, you know, the warning to put up before we say any of these things is that these are just proposals. They are not necessarily going to go anywhere. They don't have any traction at the current time, but there are some proposals that are in Congress right now that would eliminate the FERS basic benefit. There's two proposals that would get rid of the FERS supplement. There's a proposal that would increase the retirement contributions for both CSRS and FERS employees. So there's some scary things out there that are, you know, in Congress that are probably going to be studied and some debate going on, and it may or may not gain any traction before the end of the year, but they're out there.
If we look backwards 5 years, were these same concepts proposed and then denied?
Oh, we could go back 35 years.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, Mike, I gave Mike Causey a memo that went out to the Department of Air Force. They sent it out to all their employees back in the 80s. And it said, you know, we're just warning you that Congress has these proposals that they're considering, you know, for legislation. And it was the same thing I just said. It was not the first thing, but it was increasing the retirement contributions, reducing the COLA, changing the way you pay for health insurance. All the same things that we've been fearful of for 35 years, because they come up every single year.
I remember that. I went to a luncheon with Mike, and he was the guest speaker, and he pulled your memo out from the 80s, and it was about the high five, and people were going, ooh, and then 25 years ago, this was written to me by Tammy Flanagan.
Yeah, if that director of human resources was still around, they would be surprised at how much leverage we got out of that memo, because it is very telling, just to show that this is not anything new, that Congress is making these proposals, because they have to listen to their constituents who maybe don't have a pension, or if they have a pension, they certainly probably don't have a FERS supplement, you know, a bridge payment. So, you know, that to make equity between the private sector and the federal service, a good congressman's gonna do that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna pass into law.
All righty. Now, if I was sitting on my balcony looking over the proverbial landscape, one thing I know is going to happen at the end of the year, towards the end of the year, actually September, October, things like IRS money going into the TSP and the like, limits can be raised. But with low inflation, we've not seen any of those increase for 2 years. So I'm thinking maybe this year, and please, nobody should mishear this, I'm thinking maybe the thrift would go up $500 a year.
Yeah, like it did. Last year it was a $500 increase, wasn't it?
It was about 2 years ago.
Yeah. It went from 17 to 17.5.
Exactly. And it's because of this. They only go up in increments of 500. So if they did it just on inflation of 1%, it can't go up $237. So it has to wait a little bit. And so hopefully the inflation will stay there. And it radiates all the way through taxes, tax brackets. The lower tax brackets will increase, not increase in tax, but the amount taxed at a lower level will be greater than what it was in the prior year based on this inflation formula. Again, they use it with round numbers. Mm-hmm. It's not huge, but every bit helps.
Yeah.
And that just riddles all the way through from the 5% all the way up to the 39.5% bracket. So,
do you see any big change on the horizon, changing the tax brackets themselves to make a higher bracket?
They can't get much. I'm going to really back off of that comment. They can't get much higher. I've been doing this for longer than I care to remember, but I remember when they were 70%.
Yeah, I was going to say there have been times when the higher tax bracket, yeah. But then I think when we bring that up in today's dollars, it would only affect, like in today's economy, people who were bringing in $1 million+ a year.
Yeah.
So for our average federal employee, of course, most likely not going to affect most of us.
Yeah, and people say, can you tell me about the alternative minimum tax? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do that. But that was born from these high brackets. People mm-hmm. with that kind of money, like you say, could invest in things and get huge write-offs and save 70% plus the state bracket. And Congress said, you know, this isn't right. So they really tightened it, and they set up this thing called the alternative minimum tax. What is it in a nutshell? Here's your tax the regular way. Here's your tax the other way. Whichever one is higher, you pay. But remember, the design was to get the people that were bringing their income down artificially to pay a minimum tax.
Yeah, the one thing that over the past 30 years that has really improved through legislation has been the TSP. Because we've seen it start out at a very conservative, you know, five funds, limited elections, open seasons that were only held on a very sporadic basis, to something now that is much more wide open, has life cycle funds plus, you know, additional funds, actually three funds back in 87, not five. We have five now. And but it's evolved in a very careful and methodical way so that it's, you know, make sure that the costs are controlled and make sure that it's legislatively, you know, good to go for the future so that we have a good plan that's going to withstand the test of time.
Well, one thing, talking about the TSP, it's not just the TSP, it's for anybody. People with IRAs, people with TSPs, with the IRAs, everybody has to do this at 70 and a half. There's a required minimum distribution. It isn't particularly large, but it's irritation to some people. TSP would not be the case if they were still on the job, but if they're no longer on the job, they have these required minimum distributions. And over the years, they've had different kind of annuities outside of the federal sector. And again, let me just do quickly the difference between an annuity and a pension. An annuity is a promise to pay an annual amount to somebody for life for something. For folks in the federal service, it's for their years in service and their highest compensation. They do put a little money in there, but it would never pay that type of an annuity. And then there are people outside that will take money from an IRA account or just money out of a savings account and purchase an annuity. Now, it's a purchased annuity. The Thrift Savings Plan, for example, has an annuity factor. There's four distribution options, one of which is called an annuity. Now, the Thrift, of course, is not going to run an annuity, so they have to go to a large firm, and Metropolitan Life's a pretty large firm, and they have to be able to service every one of the 50 states' people in it. And so you can take some, all, whatever you want out of the TSP, and you buy an annuity. What is it? It's a monthly payment for life. But what is it really hinged on? It's hinged on interest rates at the time, I would say, is the major factor in somebody's age.
Mm-hmm. And how much you have in there.
And how much you have in there. Now, this is going to sound awful, but if this is a purchased annuity, it's the same thing. And Metropolitan Life, in this case, from the Thrift or wherever else you might go, is required to pay you a monthly amount for the rest of your life based on how old you are and how much you're going to invest. Somebody older doing this is going to, with the same investment, going to get a greater monthly payment than somebody younger because they have a shorter lifetime. Anyway, so there is this required distribution at 70 and a half. And over the years, this is not new. Annuity companies. Now, the Thrift is studying this. The Thrift is not doing this as we speak. And it's called a longevity annuity, and it allows somebody to invest today but not access it for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And that would appeal to somebody with enough funds that didn't want to take money out of their investments at 70 and a half, IRA and or Thrift. Excuse me, leave the Thrift out of this, IRAs, and buy a deferred annuity that might start 10 years from then, 15 years from then. And so IRS finally came around and said, okay, we will allow this. So in other words, somebody approaching 70 and a half with money in an IRA doesn't want to take the money out, doesn't need to take the money out. They can buy one of these deferred annuities. Now, this is looking at it totally from a tax perspective, which I always say should be secondary. It's got to have economic substance to it. Otherwise, you know, give the money away. You don't have to pay taxes on it. And you and I will gladly accept anything that somebody wants to give us. And
what's the amount that you can shelter in that type of a deferred annuity? Is it $25,000 or is it a percentage of your...
The highest amount you can do is $125,000 or 25% of what's in the IRA world, whichever is less.
Mm-hmm. Now, since that only affects people in private industry right now, because the TSP is under Title V, so they would have to have separate legislation... But would that also include the money in your Thrift? I guess it wouldn't, right? It would just be your money outside of the TSP.
It would be outside the TSP. I said 150. It's 125. You were right. The money outside the TSP could be money that came from the TSP. In other words, if you transfer money from the TSP to a traditional IRA, not a Roth IRA, then you could do it that way.
And this already has passed into law. This is already current legislation. Mm-hmm. So it affects people with IRAs and 401k rollovers or TSP rollovers well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for somebody who says, I've got enough income between my civil service or my FERS retirement, my Social Security, that I really don't want to touch the TSP because it's going to be taxed if I start touching it. So if I roll some or all of it over to an IRA, I can shelter some of it for future use.
But you would have to purchase the annuity.
That's the key.
So,
which means what if I die tomorrow after I purchase the annuity?
Like most annuities and let's just say the FERS and CSRS retirement, there are options. Options to have a survivor's annuity at a certain level. Higher or lower, whatever you choose, it's going to impact your monthly payment.
Or a cash refund.
And so they're going to have the same things here. Otherwise, it could never be sold.
Yeah. So you might think, well, the cash refund, that'd be great because then the money still goes to my beneficiary, but it no longer grows anymore, right?
So, right. And it decreases. The longer you live, the less there's going to be a cash refund. Yeah.
But let's say, I guess you could defer that if you were 70 and you wanted to buy one of these deferred annuities and start the payments at, let's say, 85. So if I died at 82, the whole cash amount would go to my beneficiary, but it would be the same amount I had in there at 70.
It would, most likely, with a fee.
Yeah.
We don't know the fees yet.
Know.
So
yeah.
When your points are spot on the bullseye.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think,
why.
Right, you got to say, why would I want to do this? So I can see some reasons why, because it allows you to continue to defer tax on the distribution, but the catch is you're turning it into a life annuity at some point.
And when I first saw it pass, and I hear it in class, why do they make me do this? I don't need to do this. Da-da-da-da-da. And somebody will look at this and say, this is great, but you got to stop. Taxes aren't all bad.
Right.
Bad investments are bad. So if I'm not saying the annuities are bad, but if you buy an annuity and it doesn't turn out to be what you anticipated, you wish you paid the taxes.
Yeah, and you really have to know about the features, because there was a woman one time with the thrift plan money. She bought the life annuity, and it was a joint life annuity. It said 50% to her, 50% to her spouse. So that was the survivor benefit. And unfortunately, 2 years after she retired, her spouse died. So for the rest of her life, she got half of the payment. See, she thought it was saying 50% to my spouse. You know, in other words, if he dies first, I get my full benefit, just like civil service and FERS. But no, under the TSP, let's say it's $1,000 while you're both living every month. And then when either one of you dies, the survivor gets $500 a month. And try getting back $100,000 at the rate of $500 a month. It's going to take you longer than you probably have left on this earth.
Right. Good point. And when you buy an annuity, you're outside the, if you will, the federal home. You're buying it from a for-profit company. I'm not saying anything bad about the company.
No, I mean, there's always a little risk there.
If you're going to take a risk, or excuse me, if they're going to take a risk, you're going to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
So...
and it's you bought it. It's not something you can give it back and get your money back.
you
That's
it.
The other downside. It's like you've given up control of that portion of your investment. So,
so
you really have to study it. That's not, you know, not something you'd want to do overnight.
All right. There's another. I think I won't say that this is major, but I'm not so sure a lot of people knew about it to begin with. This does not start until 2015. And it gets back to the trick word, do you roll money over or do you transfer money over?
Mm-hmm.
If you transfer money over, this new law really doesn't have any impact on you. It's only if you roll money. Now, there are some people that can take money out of an IRA and take possession of it. That's called a rollover. And they have a choice to to roll it somewhere else or just wait too long and pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people that would take money out of one IRA and they would utilize the money for 59 days because they had a need for it and they knew the money was going to come back, and then they just put it back in the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this new provision starting in 2015 says you can do this once a year, not per IRA. You can do this once a year.
Once a year only, yeah.
So, it's that catchphrase, and I always have trouble with this in the classes. I say, well, now, what are you going to do if you want to move the IRA money to the thrift? How do you get it over there? What's the term? rollover. I mean, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And then I have this little chart in the book. I said, shortest distance between two points is a straight line. That's a transfer. Mm-hmm. You get in the middle of this, you will not like what happens.
Right. So you tell the TSP, here's my IRA over here. Just send the money to them, and I never touch it.
That's a direct transfer.
Right, right. That's typically how you would transfer money from the thrift. Most people wouldn't take the distribution and then roll it into an IRA. But so, like you said, some people do.
Yeah, but you know, there's three boxes or they check. Mm-hmm. And they just don't look at the other two. Why are they there? I don't know. Don't look at them. Anyway, so those are two things that we know. And we know that there'll be some small impact on lowering taxes next year.
Yeah, another proposal for the thrift plan, which would be an improvement, and I think it would, I see no reason why Congress wouldn't allow this, is for new hires, federal employees who come on board, they now have an automatic 3% withholding from their paycheck that goes directly to the G fund. Under this new proposal, instead of it going into the G fund, it would go into one of the life cycle funds appropriate for the, I guess, based on the age of the person who's being hired. So if it's a 22-year-old, it would probably go into the L-2050 fund. If you're hiring a 55-year-old, it might go into the L-2010, you know, who knows, or 2020 fund. So that's a proposal. It hasn't happened yet, but I think that would be a good thing because we have too many accounts that are still 100% G fund. And they're not CSRS employees. There are many FERS younger employees who just don't understand how the stock market works or how the bond market works or even that they have the option of moving it around.
That's good. There was an article in one of these trade rags. I'm not going to tell you I understand all of Barron's. It's too thick to understand, mm-hmm. and so am I. But they had an article in there about the millennials. Mm-hmm. Is that what they call them?
Yeah. 20-somethings.
They should be looking at international investments, not picking one particularly, mm-hmm. but like the iFund. Mm-hmm. It's a great basket of it. And it isn't just stocks and bonds of the U.S. I'm not speaking badly about anybody, but I just thought it was a good, and it's called Target Retirement Funds. Mm-hmm. And they go, okay, I'm going to have this when I retire. I mean, that's pretty much what those L funds are.
Yeah.
And anyway.
And I think the other thing people have to understand is I met somebody over the weekend who he just turned 60, his 60th birthday. So he had left a company. He got laid off, actually, and just got rehired, got picked up by somebody else. But he has access now to his 401k money from his prior employer. So he says, I'm now 60. He says, I don't have to pay the penalty. So I'm going to take a chunk out of my 401k plan and buy a brand new truck. He says, my truck's $40,000. I'll take out $40,000 and I'll buy a truck. What would you say to this guy?
You didn't take out 40. It probably took out close to 65 or 70.
Well, he hasn't done it yet. So would you advise him to do this?
I'd beg him not to do it.
I just told him, I says, remember the R in IRA stands for retirement.
Very good. Yeah. I mean, I get this question in class. I'm sure you do too. I'm going to take some money out of the thrift and pay my mortgage down on my retirement home. And I go, no, take the monthly payment, get a higher mortgage. Mortgage rates are low. Just have the money go in. Now, admittedly, you're going to pay taxes on all the money coming out of the thrift for the most part. And you may or may not get a full interest deduction on the mortgage payment. But it's like pulling a log out of a three-log fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to burn as hot. So then
yeah, the other thing, too, I think, and he was under this impression, which I think a lot of people are, even smart people, because this guy's got a college degree, but he thought the fact that you're 60, there's no tax penalty. He left off the word penalty.
Yeah.
He thought there's no tax. I'm like, no, you still pay tax. It's just no 10% penalty for early withdrawal. No slap on the wrist for taking it early. Although maybe that should be 70.5, not 59.5.
Well, I think, you know, the 59.5 and the 55 for the thrift, the penalty actually was many years ago around the gas crisis is when they put it in, mm-hmm. one, to raise money, and two, to protect people from themselves. If there was no penalty, people would dry those things up.
Well, yeah, it happens anyway. And then people don't realize till April 15th what they did.
Yeah.
And they have to pay the rest of the tax that wasn't withheld from the payment.
Take a look at the first email. You pick it. One of them is long, your answer, and the other one is short.
Well, yeah, I'll condense it for radio. But But yeah, I did answer both of these through email because they were a little bit complicated. They could be complicated. Depends on how you want to explain it. But we'll do the one that I didn't send you the answer, Bob, so you don't have it in front of you. But this one came from a federal employee who's still working. He says he'll be turning 62 soon. And he had learned, luckily he learned this, that he'll be able to continue his federal health insurance as a retirement benefit. So his question is, how will I pay my portion? And also, when I turn 65, will I be able to sign up for Medicare? And how will I also pay for my life insurance? So there's a lot of questions on insurance. So first of all, when federal employees retire, you can keep your health insurance and your federal group life insurance if you meet two conditions. The first condition is you have to have had the coverage for the last 5 years of your career. So the agency is going to certify that for you by looking at your records to see that you've been covered for 5 years. So in the case of health benefits, if you were under your husband or wife's federal health plan and they don't work at your agency, make sure you let your agency know that, because that can still count towards your 5 years of coverage. The other test is that you have to be retiring on an immediate retirement. That means I'm old enough, I have enough service, so I'm going to retire July 31st, and I'm going to start collecting my retirement in August. So those are the two conditions. So as long as you meet those two conditions, you can keep your health and life insurance in retirement. Now, under FERS and CSRS, your basic retirement benefit, some people call it a pension, some people call it their FERS or civil service annuity, not to be confused with the TSP annuity that we talked about a moment ago, but out of your federal retirement benefit, that's where your health and life insurance is withheld. So it's going to be withheld on a monthly basis. And you'll still pay the same premium for your health insurance like you pay now. So the government still pays their share of the cost. For life insurance, you have to choose how much life insurance you want to keep. So it's none of it's going to reduce before you're 65 unless you cancel it. So you're really thinking in terms of how much life insurance do I want to keep after I'm retired and over 65. So if you want to keep more of it than what you'll be left with if you just let it reduce, you'll have to pay a higher premium. So, and we can go into that someday when we talk just about life insurance, but your agency can give you a reference. You can go to OPM's website, opm.gov, and get information about how your life insurance reduces after retirement, how you can pay extra to keep it if you want to keep it. Now, as far as Medicare, Medicare kind of goes hand in hand with Social Security. So for those retirees who get a Social Security retirement benefit, that is where your Medicare premium will be withheld, because Medicare Part B and C and D have a premium. So if you're paying for those benefits, it comes out of your Medicare Part B or your Social Security retirement benefit. Now, for CSRS retirees or for people who choose to delay Social Security past age 65, you can just pay for Medicare, you can do a payment plan, or you can have it deducted from your civil service retirement benefit. So, yeah, all of those benefits do continue. That's one of the nice things about federal retirement. Besides just the pension and the retirement income, you also have lifetime insurance.
Okay.
So really, really important benefits.
And this person asks, is it automatically, and you hit it?
Yeah, if you get Social Security, it's automatic. If you don't get Social Security, you have to make arrangements.
Yeah.
And you can call Social Security, and they can give you all the options for how to have it.
What's the scare story here if we were not aware that we had to contact somebody? We didn't. It's not going to be automatic. Why do we want to make sure that we do it?
Yeah, usually when you get close to age 65, you know, 3 months on either side of your 65th birthday is your window of enrollment for Medicare. That's your initial enrollment period. So even if you are still working, I would contact Social Security to let them know I'm going to be 65. You know, they don't necessarily, even though they've been collecting the tax from you, you know, all these years, they don't necessarily contact you when you turn 65. So you give Social Security a call. They have an 800 number, and tell them you're going to be 65. If you're still working, just sign up for Part A. You'll get the little red, white, and blue card that says Part A only. But if you're retired, I would strongly consider Part B as well. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, I already have health insurance. Why do I need Part B? Because Part B of Medicare pays for doctors and lab work and physical therapy and outpatient care, the same things that your federal health insurance covers. But the combination of Medicare Part B and FEHB gives most plans gives close to 100% coverage. So as you get older and possibly your health develops chronic illnesses, that 100% coverage can way outweigh the cost of Part B enrollment.
Okay. Is there a penalty if you don't sign up?
Yeah. If you delay past your retirement, and it's the later of your retirement in 65. So if I'm already 65, but I'm still working and I have health insurance through my employer, I can delay Part B with no penalty until I retire. But if I'm already retired and I delay past age 65, then for every 12 months I delay my enrollment in Part B, the premium goes up 10%. And that's a permanent increase. Now, the basic going rate for Medicare Part B is almost $105 a month. So if you waited 10 years and you saw 10 times 10, 100% increase in your premium, you'd be paying $210 a month. And next year when the premium goes up to whatever, you know, maybe 120 bucks a month, you'd be paying 240 bucks a month. So what some people do inadvertently, because they don't realize that that's going to happen, is they delay Part B until they really get sick. And they say, oh, now is worth having it. And when they go to sign up, they find out that that surcharge has been compounding all these years, and then they can't afford it. So, you know, it's like any other insurance. You buy it because you might need it. You know, it's not necessarily going to get your money's worth. In fact, most people hope they don't get their money's worth out of insurance. But you buy it because without it, it could be a catastrophic event financially.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. You can say no. You can't answer.
I never
this.
Say no.
Okay, that's true. I ought to know after all these years. And
I have no fear.
I know, which is good. All right, let's say that, just round numbers, that the Medicare premium is $100. Mm-hmm. 10 years later, with inflation and the like, it's $150. Do they pay the 100% penalty on the 150?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, it's whatever. It's, so okay. Every time there's an increase in the Medicare premium, that's going to affect your surcharge amount as well. So yeah,
people listen to that.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate. I almost think, you know, like the military did with TRICARE for military folks, it ends at 65. So if you want to be in the TRICARE for Life program, which is the kind of the Medicare supplement for TRICARE, you have to be in A and B. Otherwise, you can't have TRICARE for Life. FEHB is not like that. When a federal retiree turns 65, they have the option not to take Medicare. And many people opt not to. But then later on, I wonder how many of them regret the decision.
Yeah, especially with that penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, so then, I mean, not to say that federal health insurance won't still cover you the rest of your life, but those out-of-pocket expenses, the co-insurance, the deductible, the co-payment, that can be incredibly high with an illness, with a surgery, with follow-up care. You never realize how important health insurance is when you're healthy.
Okay, let me ask you another question then. And when you come to healthcare open season, and somebody may have had made this mistake in the past and they just don't want to pay, is, I'm not asking for names of companies, mm-hmm. but should they then shop to see that they cover more of what they lost because they didn't?
Yeah, there's some federal health plans that do kind of cater to older retirees without Medicare, because we still have some older civil service retirees who retired before Medicare was part of the federal benefit package. So if they had retired before 1983, and they never worked outside the government, there's some retirees today who can't even get Medicare, at least not Part A. They can get Part B, but not Part A. So there are some federal health plans that are the higher option plans and more expensive plans that will give much more comprehensive coverage and less co-insurance on prescriptions and less co-payments. So those would be the plans you'd gravitate to. They're extremely high premiums, but they do tend to cater more to the person who's not in the best of health. So definitely you have, in any given area of the country, you have at least 15 plans to choose from. In many cases, you have 30 or more different choices. So yeah, look around. Because I always feel bad because so many employees have, you know, Blue Cross covers about 75% of the federal employees and retirees. And you talk to someone about changing from Blue Cross and you just like talk to them about changing their religion or changing their last name. It's like, no way, I'm not going to do it. But it is worth looking around. We have excellent health plans that are outside of Blue Cross as well.
Okay. Yeah. Let's take a look at the second email.
Okay.
And your response, what, 2 pages?
Yeah, we're not going to go through
great.
The whole 2 pages.
But anyway, but yeah. The question is 5 sentences, but fire yeah. away.
Well, go ahead and read the question. I'm going to have trouble finding it.
I qualify for additional Social Security credits for military service. There is no indication of application in those years on my Social Security benefit page. And their information basically says, if you qualify, we have applied it. trust us. Is there any way I can confirm that I should trust it? That's not the exact words. My military service was between 1972 and 1976, so I don't have payroll records for that era.
Right.
And so that was a short question with a long answer.
Well, the answer actually can be found on Social Security's website, socialsecurity.gov. And there was a period of time from 1957, which was the year that military folks started paying Social Security tax. So from 1957 through 2001, so right about the beginning of the Desert Storm Persian Gulf crisis. So through those years, Social Security will give extra earnings credited towards someone's Social Security record if they served in the military during those years. Now, from 1957 through 67, the credits were added directly to the record. From 68 through 2001, you don't have to do anything to receive the credits. They were automatically added. So what it is, it's $300 a quarter. So the most you're going to get is $1,200 in additional earnings per year. So when I figured it out over the course of a career, this guy had, I think it was it 4 years or 2 years of active duty? I think he had 72 to 76. He had 4 years of active service. So when I added the extra $1,200 a year that he received in that military extra credit to his Social Security benefit, it would increase his benefit $20 a month. So it's not a huge benefit. It's something. Something is better than nothing in this case. So it's a little extra bonus added to your wages. And it is included in your earnings history. Now, when you apply for Social Security, they may have you bring your DD-214 or your military discharge certificate to verify your military service, and just in case, you know, it wasn't for some whatever reason added in. But it's a very small amount, so you may not have even realized it was in there. But it should be included in the earnings that are listed for those years when you served.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing you were talking about with the TSP, you know, since it is the beginning of the year, or the beginning of the month, we should give a little update. So the TSP did well in June?
It did real good.
As usual, June. For the year so
and,
far.
And, I mean, I got these stats for the first half of 2014, and we have a caller, so we're going to take the caller.
Yeah, let's
good
take
morning.
The caller.
Hi, my name is Tom.
Hi,
Can
Tom.
You hear me? Yes,
sure.
Hi. I'm a federal employee who will be retiring very shortly, and I have just started something called a voluntary contributions account. Do you have some familiarity with that?
I think you were talking to one who wrote the book on it, Tammy.
Oh, no, Bob actually wrote the course on it. We've talked a lot about voluntary contributions, so we're glad that you called.
Actually, we did a show on it August 13th last year, and you might want to not only listen to it, but print out the PDF. We're going to redo it probably in another month or two. We update it each year. The core hasn't changed. But anyway, enough of all that. Yeah. You have a question.
Well, I do. But I'll first tell you how thrilled I am. I'm from out of town. I'm here for work, and I just happened to hear your program this morning, and it's just so informative. For feds who live outside the D.C. area, it's hard to understand all the various details of retirement. But anyway, my question is, I understand with the voluntary contributions, I'm a CSRS employee, that prior to retiring, I can move that money into a Roth IRA. And previously, I've never been able to open an IRA because of the salary restrictions. So my question is, in fact, can I move that money into an IRA? And if so, how should I do it? Should I first open up the IRA, then move the money in, or do it simultaneously? I don't want to get in any kind of trouble, obviously.
Well, not with that kind of money. So this is going to be a dance lesson. And let's see, we move our left foot forward.
Maybe we should go back just for the other listeners to tell them what voluntary contributions is.
Go ahead.
It's a little brief, and then I'll let you take over the question.
Right.
Yeah, for those who are listening who are saying, what the heck is voluntary contributions? It's kind of a little-known program, and unfortunately, it's only available to those under CSRS. So if you're under FERS, you know, you can listen, but it's really not going to help you much. And what it is, it's a program that allows you to contribute over and above the 7% that's withheld from your paycheck into the Civil Service Retirement Fund. And the reason why a lot of employees have taken interest in this in the last 3 or 4 years is because there's been a provision in the tax law that changed to allow people to transfer, just like this caller's asking, transfer the money from the from any qualified retirement plan, not necessarily just voluntary contributions, but into an IRA, which Bob's going to talk about. But in order to do this, if you are under civil service and you want to take advantage of this, you have to set up an account, almost like setting up a bank account. And you'd have to file, it's a form 2804. It's a standard form 2804 called Application to Make Voluntary Contributions. And it goes through your agency to OPM. And then OPM establishes the account, and then you can contribute. And you can send in $50, or you can send in 10% of your lifetime salary. So for a federal employee.
Notice she said lifetime.
Yeah. So if you've been working for 30 or 40 years, your lifetime salary could be a pretty big number. And 10% of that is probably a six-figure number in many cases. So therefore, if you have that kind of money laying around that you want to put into an IRA to let it grow either tax-deferred or tax-free, this is your chance to do it. And you can do it while you're still employed, or you can even do it while your retirement's being processed. But you cannot do it after you've retired. So once your retirement has been finalized and OPM is picking up the pace on finalizing retirements, then you can no longer make contributions. And you have to take a withdrawal prior to that finalization. So if you don't make your withdrawal election, OPM will convert that money that you've put in there into an annuity, which is kind of like the MetLife annuity we talked about earlier, but it's through the government. So if you want to get that money into an IRA, you have to make sure you make that transfer effective prior to your retirement being finalized.
Okay.
But you were talking. He was, yes. His question was, okay, saying, what do I do first?
Okay, I just
want to
make sure. This is not easy stuff.
Right.
I would urge you to listen to that show in August 2013. But there's a PDF on our website. We don't sell anything. The way, we're a federal benefits, retirement, mid-career planning seminar firm. And that's where all this stuff comes from. And we've been around a pretty long time.
About 30 years.
Yeah, 30 years. And we've been doing the show for 8 years, about the same time Tammy's been writing the GovExec articles. If you've not seen them, you should look at those too. Anyway, let's get to the voluntary contribution. 10% of whatever you feel comfortable with can go into this. Now, once it goes into this voluntary contribution, like Tammy said, after you fill out the form and set it up, it will earn a better than normal rate of interest, but not a high one in today's world.
1.625 this year.
Yeah, it's better than you're going to get most places, but that's not really why you're doing it. But I did have to mention that. Mm-hmm. At the day you decide to move it out and move it into somewhere else, let's call somewhere else just for a second, you do have the ability to strip the interest earned and move it into the TSP. So in other words, you wouldn't have to pay taxes on it. That would leave only the money that you put in, and because you got no tax benefit, when it comes back out, there's no tax. But if you want to move it directly to a Roth IRA, you can do it. Now, picture that, 10% of X, I don't want to even guess, but like Tammy said, it can be pretty large. For a lot of folks, it isn't as large, but whatever it is, it's a phenomenal deal, regardless of the size of your income. You mentioned that that was a deterrent for you to open up an IRA or a Roth IRA.
Right.
You don't have to answer this question, but do you have any traditional IRAs?
Let's see. No, I did, but I converted those to Roths.
Okay.
So
he already converted some to Roth.
Right.
So he already has a Roth IRA set up. Can he roll this money directly into existing Roth IRA?
Depending on your age, you might want to do a separate one.
I'm 61 and a half now.
I think you're fine. So they could join, and you've had that in there for at least 5 years, correct?
You know what? I don't think I did. I did the conversion back in 2010, I believe, when it was first allowed.
Okay, so you're close to it, but there is a little glitch there that you might want to keep it separate. And I'd put people to sleep if I explain that one. So why don't you do it separately, and then they can come together later. So it can go directly into the Roth from the voluntary contribution. The form actually asks you, what do you want to do with the money? And you say, I want to send it to my IRA. They don't mention traditional. They don't mention Roth, but they do allow it to go to the Roth. And over the years, you know how when you get things from investment companies, they send you this form 1099 at the end of the year, you know, like interest statements.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're supposed to do that, and they've gotten better about it, OPM, but it'll show that X dollars came amount and none of it's taxable. That's really key. You want to get that form. And I'm not saying you can't do it if you don't get the form. And then you move it over. Or if you don't have any IRAs whatsoever, you put it into a traditional IRA and then move it into a Roth. So either path you go, you're not going to pay any tax.
But you have to have the IRA established for them to roll it into.
So I could establish a new empty Roth IRA, even though previously my salary precluded me from doing so.
Right.
I always had to convert existing.
You're not
putting any new
money
into it.
You can set it up. You're just not funding it.
Yep.
They won't stop you from setting it up, although sometimes the investment houses are less than thrilled for you to set up an account with no money. But if you tell them that there's going to be a lot of money coming, they probably will see you.
Right. And I would, I guess the way I've thought this through, if I could, I would establish a Roth, not have anything in it, and then immediately send my paperwork in to the voluntary contributions folks, asking that the money be moved to the Roth.
Right, and be aware that this is not a high priority request when it comes into the Office of Personnel Management, so it may not get moved next week after you send your paperwork in. In fact, it could take several months, so don't be alarmed if you don't see it show up in the account right away.
Okay, yes, I know it's very difficult to correspond with those folks.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. Okay, and then the money I've earned in interest on that account, then I would roll into the TSP, as I think you folks had talked about a few minutes
earlier. Why pay taxes on it? It doesn't make sense for you to do that.
Okay, well, I want to thank you so much. As I say, outside the D.C. area, I don't think any of the retirement planners really understand this. It's such a niche.
Well, I would say some of the bigger towns might have some. I mean, here it drives the economy in D.C., although we do travel extensively outside of the Beltway. We go all over the country and sometimes offshore doing these retirement seminars. But what I'd like you to do, if you don't mind, if you just pass the word. I mean, you'll hear no commercials on the show.
Yeah, it's on the internet, too.
Yep.
Yes, in fact, I plan to start listening, and I plan to share that with the folks I work with. And could you tell me again the website where the transcript from the August program
NITP.
NITP?
Yeah, National Institute of Transition Planning. N is it? Yeah.
It's not religious, it sounds like. It's not. I could tell you how that name got there, but it takes too long. NITP, INC, like incorporated.
.com. Okay, great. And then there would be, I guess I could just easily click and find the August program.
You can do that, but you know what else you can do? It's a bonus.
It's right on our homepage, actually.
It's always a hot show for us, like this one is, the look forward and back. But the other thing that's on there are Tammy's GovExec articles. And Tammy's very good about indexing them, too, so you don't have to scroll through 8 years of weekly articles.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you folks have made my day. I really appreciate this.
Well, you made ours, so call anytime.
Yeah, we appreciate your call.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. All righty. What do we got? 3 minutes, Andrew? All righty. So the TSP, you were kind enough. I don't know where you got it, but you sent me an email with the slideshow from the quarterly meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, anyway, we got another caller.
Oh, good.
Great.
Appreciate the discussion you just had there about the voluntary contributions savings plan. I had it. I'm an ex-federal employee, but I wanted to tell the previous caller basically is this. Tell his personnel office or his training office, in order to get the word out, that they should have seminars and courses there. That's how we were able to get that information with my agency, with the National Park Service, as well as with my wife's agency of commerce when she retired. We got that information, and we both had voluntary contribution accounts because we were civil service employees. So,
right. Do you work in the D.C. area?
Yes, I do work.
That's the difference.
Yeah, I worked in the D.C. area. But the thing about it is this, is that the courses could be at their location. And see, I work for the National Park Service, and we did have courses there in Denver, because we have a lot of staff out in Denver. And so that gentleman who just called, key thing is contacting his training office in order to get the word out, because that's the key thing. In order to get people exposed to this benefit, they need to be trained on it. And because last time we actually had a training course prior to my retirement, a lot of people were learning it. I try to pass that information out to people, but it's best to get it from somebody independent as a trainer, though. And that way they won't come back.
That's right.
We couldn't have asked for a better commercial for our seminars, but we thank you so much for calling.
Well, I learn a lot from listening, and thank you both.
Okay.
Really do appreciate
thanks so much.
Thanks, okay, and thanks, everybody, for listening besides the two callers, because we were about ready to get cut off. Andrew's giving us the choke sign. So anyway, Tammy, great to see you again.
Yeah, can I say one last thing? 77% of claims coming into OPM are now getting processed in less than 60 days.
Yes.
Amazing.
And you can probably take credit for that.
No, none.
All righty. Thank you all for listening. Tammy, thanks for coming. Next week, we got the two Johns on, John Gillick and John Elliott. And if John Gillick's on, you know we're going to be talking finance. Anyway, and John Elliott will be a guest co-host, because the two co-hosts are here. Thanks. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO.